deal with them because they keep track of your maintenance for you. But you're under no obligation to go by theirs. They're just going to remind you this is what you should be looking at. So whether you do it or not is your decision. They're located on Main Street, just east of Stapley and Mesa. It was part of the group. I didn't actually ride a horse, but I was driving the truck and one of the judges.
Okay.
So the judges were responsible. We started in Holbrook, and that we had sacks of mails, many, many sacks of mail. And it had already been processed through the Holbrook post office, and the stamp had been done, and then they also had stamped it with the hash knife. So at that particular point, we come down Holbrook Way, and every mile there's a horse waiting and a rider, and the guy hands off to the next guy, and the next guy hands off to the next guy.
Pony Express.
Pony Express. What people don't know is they work in teams. So Tom's driving the truck, and he drops Mark off at mile marker 12, my horse and me.
Right.
They're way back at mile marker 2. We're doing 14 miles an hour, by the way. That's the horse is running.
Right.
So Tom drops Mark off at mile marker 12, and he goes to mile marker 13. So Mark gets the bag and rides to you and hands you the bag, puts my horse in the trailer and goes down about 5 miles or the next mile and pick you up. But meanwhile, there's a new guy there too. Uh-huh. So we're just hopscotching one another.
Right.
So I'm in the truck and the rider with the bag is kind of off my right front headlight, maybe 20 yards, maybe 40, 50 feet. And we're judging their speed. We're judging how they ride. And we're judging the handoff. Now, in the movies, you got two guys running full speed, and the back guy's catching the front one, and they hand off the bag with left hand to right hand, and
right.
then the other guy throws it across the saddle and goes.
Right.
That never happened once.
I drop it.
In the movies, it looks like that's the way it is. Now, back then, they would ride 12 miles at a time, but they rode a fresh horse each 12
right,
miles.
They changed.
I don't know anybody in the horse world that could ride 12 today. None of us could ride 12 miles
at full
throttle.
I'd have no rear end left.
No, and that's exactly the it. Now, there's probably some young cowboys out there that could pull that off.
Oh,
But none of us older guys. But, you know, you had some riding where their arms were flapping, and you had some guys that were moving up and down, and their arms were moving with their shoulders. You had some guys properly spurring and stuff, and some guys holding on to the horse, you know, with a little bit of panic.
Right.
Nobody fell off. That's a good thing. There, every once in a while, there'll be a guy that he's sitting on his horse, and then the saddle will just slide off to the side. You know,
had that happen.
And if you put a breast collar on him, which is the collar around the front, that mm-hmm. kind of prevents that from happening. But what happens is the horse works up a sweat. Now, keep in mind, you might do between Holbrook and Payson, you might do 6 miles
right.
on your horse. Well, sooner or later, the horse is going to get a little wet, mm-hmm. and if you don't cinch up each time, then sooner or later you're coming off.
Right.
Well, and then on top of that, you got to run on the pavement sometimes. Sometimes you run off the side of the road. We had one guy running off the side of the road, and then all of a sudden, his horse is butt deep in mud.
Oh,
his front legs are high, but his whole back of his horse is in mud. Well, you saw him forward, and he grabbed a hold of the neck of his horse so he didn't fall off. And the horse stood there a minute and then just kind of pushed down on the front legs, pulled his back legs out, stepped to the side, and kept running. It was the most amazing thing I saw. Then we had one guy that was in the snow, and that happened to him, except the whole horse went into the hole. So the horse is sitting there, and his feet are 8 inches into the snow, and the horse just kind of reared up and started pawing at the snow and then kind of ran out of the snow.
Got out of it.
So, you know, one of the nice things about the Pony Express is that people in cars, 95% of the people in cars are very courteous. They recognize what's going on, and we have police cars in front of us and behind us for miles.
Mm-hmm.
And when they pass the horse and rider, now, the judge's truck, the truck I'm driving, is right behind the driver. My job is to keep everybody to the far left of their lane.
Right.
So it's a 2-lane, but we're pushing them to the left. We got idiots come by at 70 miles an hour and blow their horn.
Oh, jeez. With a horse.
Yeah, with a horse. Through the grace of God, most of the guys had really experienced horses.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a couple of people that were pulled over.
Yeah.
But it's just not the time to be stupid when you got guys galloping down the road. And some of the guys, we did a 14.6-mile average, but in reality, the first day we had 26, 27, and 28-mile-an-hour horses. The second day we had a couple that were north of 30.
Wow.
Now, when they're doing north of 30, that horse is running full out, and there are times that none of their feet are on the ground.
Right.
So they're
airborne.
They're running hard. So you can imagine that we got from Holbrook to Payson, and then we had quite a few festivities.
Right.
And we drank lots of milk. And then from there, we went to the river.
Was that Jim Beam?
No. And we went from there to the Verde River, where we spent the night. And it was pretty much Kool-Aid and milk. And then we went to Scottsdale, and that was Friday night. And then Saturday morning, they were in the Parada.
Ah.
So this morning, the entire Hash Knife group, and I would think that there was 50, 60 riders
that
were in the Parada today. And these are the guys that have just run the last couple hundred miles. And so it was pretty impressive and a lot of fun. This is the second year I've been part of the judging team. And our job is the easiest because we're in a truck. But you have no idea what it's like the first time to drive from Holbrook to Scottsdale at 14 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And so, but it was fun, a lot of fun. So what's new in
your
world?
Bill is your first caller.
Who's that?
Bill.
Bill, good morning, Bill. How can I help you?
Thank you. I have a 2012 CTS. The engine.
We lost you.
I'm sorry?
All we heard is CTS and the engine. And
The engine light came on, so I took it to the dealer, and they replaced the evaporative purge valve for $300. And then they say that it needs front upper control arm assemblies, and they want me to pay $1,158 for that. Now, I didn't take it in for that, but all of a sudden they're telling me it needs $1,100 work. What do you think about that?
How many miles are on the car?
65,000.
Let me ask you a question. This is what you should have said. You should have stepped up to that service rider, and not in an intimidating fashion, but you want to get in their bubble a little bit, and then you lock eyes with them and you say, what symptom are you going to fix with this $1,100 repair? Now, Tom's shaking his head right now. I'm going to say it out loud. There is a specific symptom for upper control arm bushings. No questions about it.
Absolutely.
Everybody knows what they are. What is it?
It's a knocking noise.
It's a knocking noise when you accelerate and when you brake.
Nope, nothing like that.
Then, you see, that's the issue. You say to them, what are you going to fix? What symptom do I have today? And you know what you're going to hear? That's what you're going to hear. Now, this goes on in independent shops as well. Right, Tom?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, we're not beating up the dealers. There's three. There's chains, independent, and dealers. And specialty shops, the tire and the exhaust and stuff like that. This kind of a problem is all over. They're making cars better. And there's less maintenance needed on the cars. Your car has 30,000 miles?
No, 65,000.
65,000, and it's a 2012.
Right.
So, I want to tell you that the upper control arms on your car are triangular, and the bushings are on the fat side of the triangle right next to the engine, left of the engine, right of the engine. So when you take off, the triangle, the point of the triangle is hooked to the top of the front wheels. So when you take off fast, that front wheel bites and pulls backwards, and there's a knock. So we're pushing backwards. And when you apply the brakes, we push forward. So it's when you take off, it's knock, clunk, a knock or a clunk. One that you can feel and you can hear.
Absolutely.
So and here's what happens. If the service rider would have gone back and said to the tech, hey, he wants to know symptoms, they would say something like, oh, they're cracked. Have you heard that before, Tom?
Absolutely. But
let me tell you what he said. It's printed out. I asked him to print it out for me. He said that front upper control arm bushings separating.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they're separating. Why don't we just look separating up and see how that applies to upper control arm bushings? What does that mean? You know what? That's like me saying, your tires are separated, and I want to put four sets of a full set of Michelins at $1,200 for the set, and they're separating. And then I say, well, what does that mean, separating? Well, they're separating. Well, separation means that the tread is separating from the carcass, which would create a vibration, but yet I don't have a vibration. So you're using the word separating, but it seems to be pretty self-serving. Can you tell my panties are wadded up about this question?
Absolutely.
You know, I want to tell you something.
Second opinion.
Yeah. But even without the symptoms, where are we at?
Right.
So
right.
You don't have the symptoms, so you don't have the concern, and so now it's been brought to your attention. But in reality, what's happened is somebody's looked at him, and there may have been some superficial weather cracks on there. And so now he's going to transition that to, instead of your upper bushings are weather cracked, he's going to say they're separating. But the fact of the matter is if there's any play there, any play whatsoever, you're going to have a clunk when you take off and a clunk when you stop.
No.
And it's going to get worse the faster you take off and the faster you stop.
No, nothing at all. And like I said, I just brought it in because the engine light came on. I mean, I had no symptoms of anything other than the light coming on. And now all of a sudden, they want to replace my upper control arm.
Well, how much did you pay on the check engine light part?
$300.
Okay. Well, you know, if they're successful, they move you from $300 to $1,100.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, CTS, is this an all-wheel drive?
No.
This is upper control arm bushings. That $1,100, let's assume that each one of those bushings is $30 a piece.
Right.
There's four.
Right.
So if we got, that's $120. And let's assume there's an alignment, so there's another $100.
Mm-hmm.
So that's $200.
Right.
That's $220, and let's round it off to $300. So now we have $800 for four bushings. But in reality, once you get the arm off, you can do both bushings at the same time.
Exactly.
So how do we do $800, even if we're at $150 an hour? How does that pencil out?
It seemed ridiculous to me. That's okay. What I'm calling.
Well, my vote is that you don't do it, and my vote is if you need it, you'll get a clunk, and when you do, I would get a second opinion and a second estimate. That's my answer.
Do you guys do that kind of work?
Everybody in our group does that kind of work.
And
So Tom at 88th and Thunderbird up north, Salem down south, and if you go to marksalem.com, you'll find the list of best car repair shops, and there isn't a one of them that doesn't do upper control arm bushings.
Well, I really appreciate the advice.
Right.
Thank you.
Good luck. 602-508-0960. We've got open lines. There's five of them. Tom and Mark are at your service, and we'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 22 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Our lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. 508-0960. If you have a car question or maybe one of your shops, whether it's a chain store, whether it's an independent, whether it's a dealer, whether it's a specialty shop, it doesn't really make any difference. Just tell us what they said and let's have a conversation about it. If there's validity to it, we're going to tell you. If there's not, we're going to tell you. And if it's kind of an iffy thing, we're going to simply give you advice on what you do to determine that you actually need that. So Kurt's Auto Repair is up on I-17 and Bell. Kurt's won just recently in his arena, so to speak. Kurt was involved in the Better Business Bureau Ethics Award, and he was a winner. And in order for you to be an Ethics Award winner, you have to be a good guy. You have to take care of customer complaints, and you have to honor your warranties. And Kurtz did just exactly that. He works on domestic and import, both gas and diesel. He has ASE certified technician. Jeff and Eric are two of the finest. One of them is a service writer, one of them is a technician, guys that I've ever met. And so Kurtz is a great place if you're in that area. Bell Road, I-17, northeast corner. Kurtz Automotive, and I think we're going to be there in the next couple of weeks to celebrate his 30th or 40th year. My wife told me that just the other day. We're going to do our show live from Kurtz Auto Repair, and it's because he's been in business a lot of years. And that should be fun because Kurt and I have fun when we're on the radio.
Well, Len is your next caller.
Actually,
Len.
It's my wife who says Kurt and Mark get into trouble together on the radio. All right, let's go to Len. Len, thank you for calling. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I am the original buyer owner of a 02 Buick LeSabre. I had some problems with it, and the check engine light came on. And I checked with one guy, and he put his finger on the dash and read it out. He says it's probably your mass airflow sensor. Well, I didn't know about that. So then I went to a local shop that I do had some work done, and he also put a thing in there to see what it was, and it came out, and he said, also a mass airflow sensor. And I asked him, I said, does that affect the gas mods? He says, yeah, sure does. I said, well, it won't go through emissions either. So I said, well, we'll replace it. So he put a brand new, I can't think of the name right now, Delco, a new Delco for mass airflow sensor, and started up, and they had the yellow light just stayed out. It wouldn't come on. Just stayed out. So that's fine. I'm all set. Well, I checked the mileage, and it's still 16 miles per gallon. What could you imagine is going on? 16 miles per gallon.
Well, you made a lot of mistakes.
Well, did I do a mistake?
Okay. Well, first of all, the code does not mean that the mass airflow sensor is bad. It says something in that system is bad. So when you went to the auto parts store or whoever the first guy to plug into the car, he turned around to you and he said, oh, you have a mass airflow sensor code. He was an idiot. Okay? He didn't know what he was talking about, because that's not what you say and that's not what the truth is. The truth is the computer is seeing something it thinks is in that system. You have to say, that just tells me the problem's in Ohio. I got to find the city, the street, and the zip code, and the street number. So it takes work. Tom, we had an oxygen sensor code on the other day. The guy had been to 10 different places. Everybody said he needed an oxygen sensor code, but he has 6 oxygen sensors, but nobody could tell him which one it was.
Right.
Do you know what's... Oh, let me turn on your mic. Do you know what it was?
What?
The fuel filter was plugged.
That'll
it was
it.
Running lean, a restricted lean. Fuel... Mm-hmm. Bingo. So you went to the first guy and he said mass airflow sensor. Then you got a second opinion who said mass airflow sensor without any testing whatsoever. So then you said, okay, go ahead and put a mass airflow sensor in. And he said, you get poor fuel economy, but you already knew you were getting 16. And that isn't too bad for an O2 Buick LeSabre. So, and you know it hadn't gone from 18 to 16. You know it hadn't gone from 20 to 16. You knew it was 16.
Well, I used to get 19.
Okay.
For years I was getting 19.
Okay. So, and then you didn't say to him the most important thing. You look him in the eyes and you say, I mean, I'm not paying for guessing, buddy. If you put a mass airflow sensor in, it better turn off this check engine light within about 2 weeks. And that code better not come back. And I want you to put that code right on my work order. Write it down.
Right.
And so, and then you pay with a credit card. And so then at 3 weeks, the light hasn't gone out. The code is still there. You go back and he says, hey, forget about it, Len. Forget about it. And so you're out $300-$500 for the mass airflow sensor and 15-16 cents to replace it. So then you say,
well, it has not come back on. Just about a couple of months ago, it had a change. It doesn't come back on. It stays out.
Okay. If that's the case, then what's the problem?
Yeah. What's the problem? I had plugs replaced. I had all kinds of miscellaneous stuff done. You know, this car's got 60,000 miles on it. It's an 02 model. That's 14 years old, 60,000 miles.
2 minutes.
Well, what's what are you asking me to give you an opinion on? I got lost here. So you had the...
I had a replacement. The one I really that came out from a oil part store, it listed several items. And another guy read one out, he read it out, said there's something with the emissions. So then the third one put it in there with the master of flow, and he's the guy that put it in there, and the light has stayed off now. It's been in about 2 months. But the gas mileage is just 16 miles per gallon, which is terrible. It's awful.
Well, I
knew it wouldn't go through emission with that light on, so that's why I had it replaced, hoping it would solve that problem, and it would maybe increase my gas mileage.
Okay, so let me encapsulate this, because I went off on a different direction. You had a whole bunch of people tell you it was a mass airflow sensor, so you had a guy put the mass airflow sensor in, or you okayed that repair, and now the light is off. You know it'll go through emissions, but now you've lost fuel economy.
Right. Well, the economy is the same way. It was 16 before, and it's 16 after.
Oh, so because one of you, because one of them said something about, does your gas mileage change, you thought that you were going to get better gas mileage once they put the mass airflow sensor in.
No, I haven't gone back to the guy that put it in there to ask him if it was the gas mileage is not changed. He didn't put it in there for a gas mileage change. I didn't even tell him that. I just, so the light was off, and They went through the procedure there and decided it was a mass airflow
okay.
sensor.
Okay, Len, we're still in different languages here. Are you getting this?
Well, I think what Len is saying is before all this was done, he was getting around 19 miles per gallon.
I just asked him that. So you were getting. Well, we got to take a break. Stay there, Len, because we got to straighten this out. We need to understand what you're saying. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Let me tell you about IMM Auto Service. They're in Tempe. And they've been in Tempe since 1972. They're in the northeast portion of Tempe, just south of the 202 and just west of the 101. David is a good guy. I've known David probably since about 1979, 1980. David works on all kinds of cars, domestic, foreign, just about everything you have in your garage, he works on. But he's quite different than a lot of other shops because he specializes in Swedish, Italian, and Asian vehicles. So Volvo, Saabs, Fiats, Alfa Romeos are the cars that he really focuses on. However, in your garage, you can have a Chevy, a Ford, a Chrysler, a Toyota, Honda, and he can handle those as well. But those of you with those cars that make most of us shake in our boots, those Volvo, Saabs, Fiats, and Alfa Romeos, you really need to develop a relationship with IMM Imports. All right, let's go back to Len. And Len, let me ask you a couple of questions, okay?
Sure, go ahead.
All right. You had some codes about a mass airflow sensor, and at the end of the day, someone replaced the mass airflow sensor, right?
Right.
Okay. Then 30 days later, or in that 30 days, the check engine light went off. Right?
Well, it went off right away. So they put it in.
Okay.
Turned the key, started the engine, the light went off. It was not there.
Okay. Well,
it was there before it started, and then put
Len,
in the
stop,
sensor,
stop,
and turn it
stop,
on,
stop, 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 Len, stop. We're just going to get a yes or no answer out of you because we need to hone in on this. Len, when we do work on your car, we clean the computer's memory, so we expect the light to be off when we give it back to you. But sometimes it'll take a while, so I was trying to cover both of those bases. So let me ask you again. After he did the mass airflow sensor, the light was off and is off today, yes?
Right, yes.
Okay, exactly what's the problem that you want me to comment? And I think it has to do with fuel economy. So before he did the work, are you saying that you were getting 19 and now you're getting 16?
No, not at all. I've been getting 16 miles per gallon for about the last year and a half, 2 years.
Okay, so
it used
what?
To be 19 for several years since the 14-year-old car. For years I was getting 19, and then it's about 2 years ago I started checking the mods. It was way down to 16. I didn't bother with it because I drive so little.
Okay. So there's the question, how do I get back to 19?
Well, yeah, some kind of an improvement.
Okay. Well, how many miles were on this car?
It's coming up to 60,000, a couple hundred miles below 60,000.
Okay. Have you ever had new spark plugs put in it?
Yes.
Okay. How many times? Once or something?
Just once.
Okay.
Just once.
Have you passed emissions every time you've gone through?
Yes.
Okay.
That's another question. Yes, I just went through there.
All I need is a yes.
Weeks ago.
All I
yes.
need is a yes. Okay.
Okay.
And so what you're telling me is because you've passed emissions every year, then Tom, you have to agree that he doesn't have any fuel coming out of that tailpipe.
No.
And he's not running fuel out of the tailpipe because he wouldn't pass emissions.
Correct.
And he'd have a check engine light for 100 different reasons.
Absolutely.
Okay. So it has to be that your car's getting older, which means he's been around the world twice.
Right.
Because it's 25,000 miles around the girth of the earth. So he's been around the world twice, and he's lost what basically is 3 miles to the gallon.
Correct.
And if you take the 19 and divide it by 3, help me with this. That's about, what, 30%?
Right.
Okay, or 20%, something like
right
that.
Around it.
So the only possibility exists is that the car is being driven more in the winter than in the summer, or vice versa, because the moisture in the air in the wintertime will affect your fuel economy.
Correct.
And perhaps maybe he's driving it a little less in the summer and a little bit more in the winter. Or perhaps Len is drag racing a lot more than he used to. And
that's possible.
I don't have an answer for you because what you're saying is you've lost 3 miles to the gallon on it, but the fact that you've passed vehicle emissions and that you haven't changed your driving habits and you had the spark plugs changed, I'm unable to give you an answer as to what might be wrong with your car. Because okay. all the things that should have been wrong that cause your fuel economy to deteriorate, you've had handled or has been recently repaired. And with the absence of a check engine light and the oxygen sensor screaming at us through the check engine light, then I don't know the answer. The only thing I can think of is perhaps maybe your tires haven't been checked for the proper inflation. That would be something that we could certainly look at.
No, right. I got my own air pump, and I check it quite often. Okay. I have my own little air pump.
All right, Elaine, I'm just done. I don't have any other thing to ask you because it's just, like I said, it's kind of like spark plugs, yes. Air pressure, yes. Mass airflow sensor, yes. Check engine light, yes. And I'm all out of guesses. But thank you. Thank you very much. Let's go to Alan real quick. Alan, we're going to get your question out, and then we're going to answer your question after the break. But go right ahead, sir.
Hi, long time listener, first time caller.
Okay.
You guys are great, yeah. I had about 4 or 5 weeks ago, you were mentioning something about putting something in the transmission to lube the seals. What was that?
What we were talking about was, is if you have a slightly dripping or leaking transmission rubber seal, that you could put a half a pint of .3 or .4 brake fluid in your transmission, and if the seal was just hard and we wanted to make it softer, we wanted to make it more pliable. It's kind of like taking a hard tortilla and putting it in water where it becomes more pliable. So if you put, like I said, a half of pint of .3 or .4, it will rejuvenate the seal, and a lot of times it will slow or stop the leak. However, if the leak stays the same, there's a good chance that the seal has split. And if the seal has split, then nothing's going to fix that. Does that answer your question?
Sure is, my man. Thank you very much. You guys have a good
day. You bet. Thank you, and Alan. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. We've got lines wide open. Tom Fletcher from Thunderbird Auto, 88th Avenue in Thunderbird. My name's Mark Salem. We're here at your service. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour. And our lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or car problem. Tom, when it comes to car repair, I tell folks that there's two kind of questions. What symptoms do I have that match your repair, like we talked about the upper control arm bushings? And the second thing has to do with, are you guessing? And if you're guessing, whose money are we using?
Right, right. Tax are very important.
Yeah. People will say to me, do you follow your own advice? And people will say to me, are you exempt from your own advice? And the answer is hell no.
Right.
People say that to me and my staff, mm-hmm. and there's no question. I had a guy call me. It was really nice. He was from Northwest.
Uh-huh.
And he said, I have this noise. I've spent a significant amount of money trying to find it, and it's a clunk. And he says, I want you to guide me, but there's a minimal amount of suspension in the Northwest. And I said, well, let's talk about it. And so we talked about it, and I said, well, I think this guy can take care of it, or this guy, I know they can, but they're a little ways away from you. And he says, okay. He said, well, I want to bring it to you. And I said, okay. But he says, I want your assurance that you're going to fix it, and you're not going to guess. And I said to him this, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to diagnose it for you for free, because a clunk can't be that hard.
Right.
It just can't be that
right.
hard. So I'm going to drive it with you, and you're going to show me how to make it happen. Then you and I are going to drive it together, and then I'm going to drive it, so you teach me how to get it happen. I'll diagnose it for free. And then you, as long as I can see your driver's license, you don't even have to pay me. I'll tell you what the estimate is, and then you don't have to pay me until you're sure the clunk is gone. And if the clunk's not there, you don't ever need to come back. You don't ever need to pay me. I'm not going to send you a bill or nothing. You're on your honor. And there was this silence on the telephone. And he goes, I'll take you up on that. So the answer is I practice what I preach. But there's just too much of the other going on where there's guessing. And it starts with that three-whiskered kid at the auto parts store.
Oh, yeah.
Who plugs in and tells the people, this is what's wrong with your car. What bothers me the most, Tom, is they'll sell them two or three parts.
Right.
And then the customer will come to you or me and say, you know, I have this check engine light, and I've already spent...
Got the code.
$203, $230, $250 over here,
mm-hmm.
but I still have the same code. And my response may not be the most polite response. My response is why wouldn't you go back to him? And their answer to me is always this, well, I needed him anyway. And that really wads up my panties.
Right.
Because if I put an air filter in, and you know why we always give them the air filter back? Because if they argue with us, I'll just go put the old one back in and take my new one back out and give them credit.
Right.
We always take the old air and the cabin filter. We always put the old filter, not oil filters and gas filters,
no.
but all the air in the cabin, we put back in the boxes and put on the passenger side floorboard, because if there's a complaint, boom, we're done.
Show and tell also.
Yeah. Oh, fact. And it is. It is show and tell.
Fact. Vince is your next caller, Vince.
So when you... They go to the three-whiskered kid. They're willing to spend $200 or $300. They come to me. I don't know what yours is, but I'm going to tell you mine. I'm telling them between $70 and $125 is going to be your diagnostic money,
right.
80% of the time.
Right.
I've got guys out there that are $125. I got guys out there for $75. But mine is $75 to $125, which covers everybody.
Right.
So that's what you're going to spend. Oh, well, I don't want to spend that. That kid didn't do it. Well, that kid didn't diagnose your car right either.
And you spent the money to replace parts you didn't
right.
need.
Well, no, I needed them.
Well, so he says.
Well, but I needed them. I have 65, 70,000 miles on them. Go ahead and play this game with me, buddy, because I got you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So no matter what, we lose that conversation.
Exactly.
So anyway, it's going to cost you $75 to $125 to find your problem. I guarantee that my fix will fix your problem.
Right.
I guarantee your engine light will go off in the first 30 days or 300 miles. I guarantee, and if it doesn't go off immediately. But a lot, as you well know, sometimes it takes some time to go off. You have to go through what they call a drive cycle.
Drive cycle, right.
All righty. Let's go. Who was the caller? Vince. Good morning, Vince. How can I help you?
Yeah, I just have a couple of generic questions about my car.
Sure.
It's a 2010 RX 350
okay.
with about 82,000 miles on it.
Okay.
It's running fine. I've been reading in the forums about a couple issues, or not issues, but suggestions. And one is that the Lexus brand said that even though it was recommended that you change your oil about every 3,500 miles, they've extended it out with the synthetic oils to 10,000 miles. And also, the other question I had was, my car drives on premium gas, and is it permissible to put regular gas in there, even though they say it's all right, and... What is your thoughts on it? Just
okay.
Basically.
Thank you. God bless you for calling, Vince, because these are easy. First of all, there are three kinds of oil out there, and Lexus is not the only car maker to change their mind in the last 5 years. Here's the deal. Conventional oil, Mother Nature oil, the oil that's been around since the 1930s and 40s, that's called conventional. That's got a 3,000-mile interval, 3 to 5. Okay? And this goes from cars from 1996 north of that. So a conventional oil is from 3 to 5,000 miles. We have a semi-synthetic or a blended oil, which is a little bit of conventional and a little bit of synthetic, and no one will tell you if it's a 60-40, 50-50, or if it's an 80-20. But we got blended oil that go from 7,500 miles to 10,000. Then you got the syn oils, which is man-made without many of the negative Mother Nature properties, and that synthetic is going to go between 10 and 12. So 3 to 5, actually it goes from 3 to 5, 5 to 7,500, 75 to 10,000, and 10,000 to 12,000. Some of the newer model cars are going to use Mobil 1 Extended, which gives you the extra 2,000 miles on the top end, so that goes from 10 to 12. So, how many miles a year do you drive that car?
Oh, probably less than 10.
Okay. I would think, if you were my customer, I'd say this. Vince, let's put you in a synthetic. Let's put you on a 10,000-mile interval, and I want to see you April in every year. I want to change your oil in April just before our Phoenix summers. I want you to go through the hot months with fresh oil, and I want to see you one time a year. Although, Vince, if you let me just put the cheap oil in there, then I get to see you three times a year, and I get to charge you a lot more money.
Yeah.
So those are your two choices, Vince. You can either do a 10,000 synthetic and bring your car in once a year,
right,
or you can use any of the others. Now, some people say, Mark, I don't like you to see my car once a year. I want you to see it twice a year. And so I say to them, okay, then let's go to a semi-synthetic. Remember, it has 5 to 7,500. So I'll do a semi-synthetic, and here's what I'm going to do. I want to see you in April and in November. First of summer, first of winter. So I see you twice a year. I do two oil changes, and you get comfort out of that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm at about 6,500 now with this synthetic, and it's an AMS oil. They've got three levels of synthetic, but mine's kind of the medium. And I check it regularly just because I've heard that some cars burn oil more than others.
That's
even
true.
Though and this one's just fine. The oil looks clear and doesn't see it show any wear on it, you might say. So I was just checking.
Okay, wait. I got to tell you something. I'm an oil expert. I've been trained to test oil, to make oil. And I want to tell you that you can't tell and I can't tell when an oil's worn out by sniffing it, smelling it, or tasting it. We can't tell. You can't tell what color it is and all that other kind of jazz. I want to tell you also that AMS oil is kind of an oil that's not on the mainstream because it's more of a... What's that ladies' cosmetics that they have, the ladies that sell the other ladies, and it's kind of a
multi-level
marketing where you got one guy that has...
Avon.
AMS oil is kind of an Avon thing. Now, I think Mobil 1, and I think Chevron, and I think Valvoline and Castrol, I think those are every bit as good as all the rest of these, and I know they are. And I've had the opportunity to test AMS oil, and I have the opportunity to test it against some of the major oils. But I want to tell you that if I were broke down in Benson, Arizona, and all I had is AMS oil, I'd be okay with that. On the other hand, I'm not going to drive to Benson, Arizona to have AMS oil put in my car.
Right.
So in your particular case, if you've got a 10,000-mile oil on there and you got 6,500 on it, why don't you plan on April, this coming April, to change your oil, and then you can decide what the heck you want to do.
Okay.
Now, on your fuel.
Yeah.
I have had a supercharged Jaguar my wife drove. I've had Corvettes, stupid when I was younger. I've had high-performance cars all my life. My wife and I did this for 6 months. I took her car, and she took my car, and we'd both fill them up on Saturday morning, and she would not tell me what she put in my high-performance Corvette, and I would not tell her what I put in her Jaguar that had a blower on it.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about a very fast, high-performance, it's an air-injected car.
Right.
And over a period of 6 months, we did that. And neither one of us was better than 50-50. Now, let me explain the difference between the two gasolines. I'm holding a balloon in my hand. Are you picturing that?
Mm-hmm.
Here's regular. I stick stick a pen in it, and it goes boom. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
That's a millionth of a second. The balloon deflates in 1 millionth of a second. Now, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to take that same balloon, and I'm just going to let go of the bottom of it, and it's going to go. You with me?
Right.
That's called 2 millionths of a second for it to deflate. So,
okay.
Regular gasoline, one molecule ignites 10,000. 10,000 ignite a million, and the explosion is done. Now, I'm exaggerating this. Please understand. Super unleaded gasoline, one ignites two, two ignites four, four ignites six, and it's just a little longer of a burn. So it really is between 1 millionth of a second and maybe 2 millionths of a second. I promise you that if I fill up your cars three times in a row, you will pick wrong two of the three times.
Right.
And if you let me, and you know. So to answer your question, are you married?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Have your wife go down next time and have her fill up your car. Maybe take her over to the jewelry shop or, you know, to Walmart for lunch or whatever. And you say, you go fill up my car, but don't tell me what it is. And see if you can pick it. And I guarantee you, you can't.
So there's no potential engine damage or anything else with electronic ignitions and everything else they got now?
No, because the computer monitors, it has a knock sensor that's attached to the engine block. And when you have pre-ignition, otherwise we're setting the gas off before the computer wants it. It's called pinging, it's knocking. There's a knocking sensor on it, and it retards the timing. It does that 3,000 times a second.
Jeez.
So in your particular case, if your car were to ping, you might hear one ping. That's it. The computer is going to respond that fast. And so the answer to your question is, Tom, have you ever seen an engine that was hurt, destroyed, or even needed a Band-Aid because they used regular instead of super?
Never.
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 And,
like,
and how many?
The engine controls and adjusts for the difference.
Since 1996.
Right.
Okay. Now, Tom, how long have you been in the business working on cars?
52 years.
52 years, and I'm 37. I'm probably within the average of 5,000 and 10,000 cars a year. You somewhere close to that?
About 3.
3,000. Okay. So there you go. We have 80-some-odd years between us, and we've never seen a car that was damaged, that had any problem, or that had any issues with the kind of gasoline that put in it.
Right.
Except for the people that use kerosene and other stupid things, and that has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
Well, I noticed that in the 2011 RX350, you could do regular. So I couldn't figure out what's the big deal here other than making money for the gasoline companies whatever.
I got to go, but let me just comment real quick. The answer is that premium fuel drives people away. So if I make it a regular fuel car, I'm going to have more buyers. And that's the answer. 602-508-0960. Tom and I are here for another hour. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We're going to be back for another hour in about 3.5-4 minutes. You're welcome to join us.
Automotive Mayhem with the real car guy, master technician Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here helping you out with your car problems. But first, I got to take care of some business. Larry Harker's Autos at 38th Avenue and Indian School. Bob and Ellen own and operate Larry Harker's Auto. Larry is one of those guys that you just have to wave the flag in front of the bull. You have to say to Bob, Bob, I've got this car problem, and it's been there for 7 years, and I've had it to so many shops. I've had it from Albuquerque to Los Angeles. Everywhere on 40's had it. No one can fix this car, and I'm told by everybody that no one can fix it. That's all you have to say. Because that's just like standing in the middle of a bull ring and waving that red cape in front of him. Because I have sent him cars and done just that to him. And he's fixed every one of them. He did a Chrysler truck the other day that it was the most amazing transaction between how he got there and how he fixed it. It was amazing. So if you need a diagnostician, then may I suggest that Larry Harker be one of the places that you call and talk to. They've been around a very long time, since 1967, and they can handle failed emissions and oil changes and electrical work, air conditioning work. They can do brakes and tires and suspension and all that kind of stuff, foreign and domestic. But more than anything else, they're well known and well respected for Bob's diagnostic capability. So let's go back to the phone. 602-508-0960 is the phone number, 602-508-0960, and we're going to talk with Richard. Richard, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning, Mark. I have a 2009 Chevy Blazer, and when I take off in the morning, the first shift is fine. The second shift, there's a little thud when it shifts, and the third shift is fine. Same thing when it's shifting down. But only that second shift. I don't know if that second, third gear, whatever that is.
Okay. So then, basically, I think what you're saying is there's a noise between one and first and second.
Yeah. Okay. I can, you know, you can feel this car shift.
Okay.
You know, from first to second, and then it's the next shift, the second shift, that makes that little thud. It's not a loud thud. It's just a thud.
Okay. Can you feel it if your foot's flat on the carpet? Can you feel the thud as well?
I think I just hear it.
Okay.
Coming from the rear.
All right.
I think.
Go ahead.
That's it.
Okay. So really, it's not the 1-2 shift. It's the second shift you have. And the first shift would be 1-2, and the second shift would be 2-3. So
yes.
So what I want you to do is I want you to start soft pedaling this throttle as much as you can and get past that second shift, that what we call 2-3 shift. So I want a real light throttle on a Sunday morning, tomorrow morning, and I want you to drive around and just do real light throttle, and then I want you to change it. I want you to be heavier. I want you to be like you're late for church. I want you to throttle up a little bit more. I want to know if you can make it change by driving it as if you had a hot cup of coffee on the dashboard in front of your wife or you were on your way to a fire. Does that make sense?
Okay.
And here's why. Here's why. I think you might have a broken motor mount. Are you smiling? Why are you smiling?
Yeah.
Tom's motor sitting mount. Here shaking his head. So I think you have a motor mount, and it could be one of the motor mounts, or it could be the transmission mount.
Yeah.
And so I think if you say that that thump goes away on light throttle application, then here's what we're going to do. Tom or I, or your shop, we're going to put that on the rack, and we're going to have one of our technicians underneath it, and we're going to put it in first gear. And we're going to hold our foot on the brake, and we're just going to kind of stab the throttle a couple of times. And if that rear tranny mount's bad, the guy underneath is going to see the back of the transmission lift up and fall down. And he's going to see light in between. And how many miles are on your Blazer?
30.
Okay. That's not too many miles, but if it got oil-soaked, it could come apart. It could also be an engine mount, because you're going to have three. Is it two-wheel drive or four-wheel drive?
Two-wheel.
Okay. So it's got a tranny mount and two engine mounts. So
I'm, 7 years.
But 7 years. I agree with you. 7 years. So anyway,
yeah.
But you're not going to say that you have a bad mount. You're going to take it to your shop, and you're going to not do it on Friday morning or Friday afternoon or Monday morning, but you're going to say, I have a clunk I can demonstrate, so would you allow me to have your technician for 15 minutes? I'm not going to take him for 30 or 45 minutes, but I just want to drive around and show him what I'm talking about. Would you let me borrow your tech for that? And you don't say anything else. And if they call you back and say it's a mount, then two people have said it's a mount, and we're guessing, and they had it in their shop. But if they say that it's the rear windshield wiper, then you know what to do. Okay?
Yeah. Okay, cool. Thank you.
All right, Richard. Thank you. Maxwell, how can we help you today?
Hi, yes. I've made quite a few mistakes, but I got a used truck from a car dealership.
Okay.
Has had 104,000 miles on it. It's a Dodge Dakota. I didn't do enough due diligence, I guess, in checking it out and test driving it, but it was seemed pretty solid. I knew it was a used truck, but after a little while and getting on the freeway, it started, the rear end started getting loose, and it was vibrating at about 65. Took it back to the dealership. They balanced the tires, didn't fix the problem. I rotated the tires to see if it would shift to the front. Didn't. Went to a couple different places and shops to have them check it out. One place I did a lot of work myself. I had the carrier bearing replaced on the drive shaft. I did the shocks front and rear, and another shop told me one of my leaf springs was shot, so I replaced my leaf springs in the back. Stiffened the truck up, made it more solid, but I was still getting vibration on the freeway.
Okay, now wait a minute. Don't tell us what you've changed, because if you still have the problem, we're going to disassociate ourselves from that. You said it was speed-related.
Yes.
Okay, when you get to 65, it's there.
Yes.
And when you throttle up from 65, either lightly or significantly, does it ever go away or get worse?
It's pretty constant, and I can see the bed of my truck shaking.
Okay. But does it get better or worse when you go north of 65? And I want to hear, like, Mark, if I throttle up hard, it seems to go away by 70 or 75. Or if I throttle up easy within the next 5 miles an hour, the shake goes away. Anything like that?
At 70, it goes away.
Okay. Now, same thing on the low side. So as you accelerate up, everything's fine to like 50?
Yes.
And then when you get close to 60, the vibration comes in, and then it goes away about 70. So it's really a kind of a mile an hour spread, perhaps from 50 to 70?
Yes, it's more concentrated about like, about 60 to 70 is
okay.
Where it's the worst.
Okay. I don't like the idea that you're looking at the tailgate or the bed shake in your rearview mirror, and we're spending a whole lot of your money on that problem and your time, because I don't think that appears in our diagnostic manuals, that where we look in the rearview mirror and look at the tailgate or the bed. That doesn't there. But here's what you do. I like that you switch tires, right? Don't you like
mm-hmm.
it? That eliminated the tires.
Right.
We're done with that. And if he did the carrier right and it didn't change the noise, then whoever did the carrier did that right.
Right.
So we're looking at those kinds of things. It's not going to be anything to do with the brakes because he's not applying the brakes. So I think what I would do is are you married, Maxwell?
I am.
Okay.
I am, yeah.
All right. Does your wife like you?
Yeah.
Okay. So you got a couple of choices. You get your wife on Sunday morning to head down the 101, and you teach her how to make it happen. He drives another car, and she's in the center lane, and he swings over to the right, and his driver's window is right next to the right side of the car. He can watch those two front tires. He can look at the axle. He can do all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Then he slows down, comes in behind her, and he comes on the other side of her, and he looks at the left front and the left rear tire. And so he gets her to make it happen, and he's kind of rotating her car around that way. Now, if she doesn't like you and she can bump you Daytona style, she'll throw you into the wall, and you'll be all crashed up. But then you crashed her car, not your truck. Another thing you might do is soften the tires. They're probably a maximum of 35 pounds. Yes?
Yeah, I keep them at about 35.
Okay. Drop them to 20 and go see if it's there. Or 25 and just go see if it's there. I'm not wanting you to drive more than 10 miles. But I want you just to drive enough at 25 to see if it's there. All of them. Drop them all to 25. And so
okay.
If it changes it, we've got a tire and that tire balance, but then we still got to go back to that tire rotation.
Right.
Back to front and front to back. So that's kind of how, and I'll tell you what, there are shops out there that have these vibration meters, and they're magnetic, and we put them by all four tires, and then one guy drives and the other guy sits next to him and he's watching meters. And we can tell which corner of that truck the vibration's coming from. But frankly, if you do that with your wife, you'll be able to tell too. And here's another thing, and I ask her, I ask you if she loved you. If you get in the bed of the truck, then you can crawl to the left front and to the right front.
2 minutes.
And to the right rear and the left rear. And any person with a half a brain is going to be able to figure out which corner of that bed that vibration's the worst. But, of course, if she slams on the brakes and you go flying through the back window, then she's mad at you.
All right. Well, I'll make sure I do it on a good day.
All righty, Maxwell. Thank you very much, buddy.
Thank you.
All righty. Those happen a lot. Those happen
yes.
a lot. I would say to Maxwell, and I'm sure he's probably listening, it would have been better to get an opinion first from somebody.
Correct. Before replacing parts.
Yeah. We had a guy bring a very fancy car in. It was a Lexus.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't have this vibration. So Alan, my son, who's like the vibration king of our area,
right.
He says, well, let me go. I need you to show me. Well, the guy couldn't show him. He had him out for like an hour, and he couldn't show him the vibration. Oh, it only happens on the way to Tucson. So
1 minute.
Alan says, okay.
Don't go to Tucson.
Alan says, okay, you're going to have to leave it with me for 24 hours, and I'll run it. He said first, you don't tell me what mile marker you're at. We're at 158, and we go higher as we go south.
Right.
So we're on 158. You tell me what mile marker I got to hit before the vibration. So the guy does that. So Alan takes it a couple days later, and he comes back, and I said, what is it? He goes, it's the tire. I said, yeah, but he's had the tires balanced 15 times. He says, I know, but we need to clock one of the tires because we got the heavy side of the wheel and the heavy side of the tire on the same. So I said, okay, fine. So he takes the, he says, and it's, by the way, it's in the back of the car. And I says, well, I want you to do all four because we're not going to mess around. Because if he rotates them, then we're really in trouble.
Right.
So he does that. And the guy comes in and he's holding me to the fire. And I don't care about that. He goes, I'd prefer not to pay you until I make sure that this is it. And I said, you know what? I'll use a copy of your driver's license and a copy of your credit card to make it easy for you. If you call me and say, Mark, I still have the vibration, I'm going to shred both of those pieces of paper. So he says, fine. He says, because I'll know in the next hour. I'm headed to Tucson. I said, fine. So he heads to Tucson, and I don't know, 20 minutes later, 30 minutes later, he calls Alan. He says, go ahead and have your dad run my credit card.
Good.
And it was one of those things, too, where he had spent a whole lot of money, but it was just one tire. And the balancers right now, I think you'll agree, there might be four different levels of balancers.
Oh, yeah.
There's the old style, then there's kind of a middle, then there's a sophisticated, then there's that ultra-sophisticated hunter bad boy. And that's the one that matches the heavy side of the tire to the light side of the wheel and vice versa. So that road force guy, if you know how to use that well, you can literally make all cars ride like, you know, a Lexus, if like, that's what you want.
Like,
all right, when we come back, we're going to take your calls. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And by the way, we were talking about oils.
Yeah.
Yeah, like AMSOIL. Somebody texts me and he says, well, what about Mary Kay Cosmetics and the pink Cadillacs? and the point we tried to make there was, is Mary Kay sells cosmetics.
Right.
So does Revco, or so does all the other guys.
Revlon, yeah.
And Revlon and all that kind of stuff.
Max Factor.
And Max Factor, yeah. So oils like AMSOIL and Mobil 1, they're kind of the same thing.
Right.
It's one of them's Mary Kay, sold by an AMSOIL distributor, and one of them you can buy at Target. So,
right.
We'll be back right after this. Howdy. 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. I want to tell you real quick about Air Park Auto in North Scottsdale. Air Park Auto in North Scottsdale is run by Nadine. Nadine and Stacy opened Air Park Auto about 20 years ago. Stacy passed away 4 or 5 years ago, but Nadine stayed at the helm of Air Park Auto. They're on Raintree just east of Hayden, and Raintree is just south of Bell. Nadine knows the difference between right and wrong, and the good news for both men and women customers is Nadine is smart enough, and her staff is smart enough to know when the technician's blowing smoke up somebody's skirt. So you think you might be better protected by a shop owned by a guy, and I'm here to tell you that's not the case at Air Park Auto. So if you want to try Air Park Auto and you live in that North Scottsdale area, may I suggest you try them for an oil change and see how you're treated. And I'm quite sure that if you don't have a shop, you will when you get done. Let's go to the phones. Ray, you're up first. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. Thanks for taking my call. I don't have a real problem. I have a 2013 Honda Fit.
Okay.
And there's no problem except when I was in high school from 56 to 60, my dad's old Buick and his old Oldsmobile, you know, the big round fenders.
Mm-hmm.
We used to always degrease the engine when we were going to change plugs to get a degreaser and then hose it down. And when I was doing with my oil change at the dealer a couple of months ago, the fellow who received me, he said, "Oh, your engine's dirty." And it makes me want to maybe grab a degreaser and go with the engine. But then I know that there's a lot of sensitive electronic parts these days. I don't know if that's still something that you just do or you avoid putting a degreaser in your engine because of the electronic parts.
Okay, I can answer that. I think you need to stop at a reputable shop and ask them where the TPS is, throttle position sensor.
Yeah, okay.
And I want you to wrap that thing with a piece of canvas or a big plastic bag, or I want you to cover it up with an old coffee can. I don't care what you do. And after that, nothing else matters. So
okay.
That's all you need to cover up. You need to cover up the throttle position sensor. It's going to be close to where the throttle cable attaches to your throttle area. It's kind of like it's next to the carburetor, so to speak. Just have them point it out. And and then get a foaming degreaser, and your motor's slightly warm. You pull into a self-serve car wash, open up the hood, spray that thing down like it looks like whipped cream on top of a strawberry milkshake. Then close the hood, wash the rest of the car, and then when you're done, open up the hood, go to rinse it off, then finish with RO water, then hop on the freeway, drive down 5 miles, come back, and you'll really like what you just did. And what you just did would have cost about $115 somewhere else.
I've always had that old inkling, you know, you look at an engine and my impulse is to grab that degrease it, but then...
No, just get the Foaming stuff. That's what I use.
Foaming stuff.
Yep.
All
right. Okay, thank you, Ray.
Yes, thanks a lot.
You bet. John, you're up next. John, how can I help you today?
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi. I've got a 1986 Ford Ranger. It has 384,000 miles on it. It's got a four-cylinder, 140 cubic inch engine. It burns about a quart every 2,000 miles. But, you know, it's still running pretty strong, actually. And my question is this, and it's a recent problem that just started showing up, which is, if I drive the car or the truck at freeway speeds, down when I go to downshift, push in the clutch, and usually I let the transmission speed catch up with the engine speed before I try to pull it into the next lower gear, the engine will stall, almost as if it's running out of fuel, like it's starved for fuel. When I go to start the motor back up again, either by bump starting it or using the starter motor, it idles fine. So going from high speed idle like...
Okay, hold on. It's not a fuel problem at all. It isn't a fuel problem. I guarantee you it's not a fuel problem because you unloaded the motor when you pushed the clutch in. So there's no longer a load, and because there's no longer a load, there's no additional need for fuel. I think what's going on, and you shake your head or chime in, I think the EGR valve's stuck open. I think he's going down the road, he's high RPMs,
right,
and then he clutches it, and the EGR's still open, kills the engine, then it closes, and then by a dime he's done selecting all of his shifters and waving the dead chicken around his head, then it works.
Right.
So here's what you do. Unplug the EGR valve, the vacuum line to it, and stick an old pencil or a golf tee in the vacuum line, into the rubber line, and go drive it for a week. And I'll bet your problem goes away. Then you're going to have to figure out whether the EGR is bad.
Or the intake's plugged.
Or the vacuum source to it is defective.
Yeah.
Or the valve itself is defective. So intake could be plugged. Valve can be defective. The whatever turns on the valve can be defective. Or the vacuum source can be defective. So there's some work that needs to be done.
Those have a EGS solenoid?
Well, I don't think so because he's got an 86.
Oh, that's right.
And I'm thinking that it doesn't. I could be wrong and you could be right. But anyway, unplug the EGR. Plug the vacuum line to the EGR. See if it goes away over a week. And if it does, Mark and Tom are right. All righty, let's move on. Thank you, John. That was a great question, and you described it perfectly for us. That was a good thing. But unfortunately, we're not going to agree. It's a fuel problem. Ron, number one, how can I help you today?
Yes, I got a question on my 04 Caddy SRX.
Okay.
And what I'm getting on the dash is a... it's built into the radio, you know, it tells you whatever the hell's wrong with your car.
Uh-huh.
And it says check stability system. And but the wheels are in alignment, there's new tires.
Okay, stop. None of that makes any difference.
Okay.
The stability control has to see all four tires spin, and they better be spinning the same. The stability control is as Ron number one comes up on a grade school crosswalk, and at the last minute, some kid runs in front of him, and Ron steers the right and hammers the brakes. Two things happen. ABS comes awake, and stability control comes awake. And ABS is supposed to keep the tires from locking up, and stability control is supposed to keep the nose somewhere where you can recover. And they both work off the sensors. I don't care about all of that. Stability control almost always says I've lost control of one. I've lost sight of one of the tires. And the sensor's broken. The sensor's bad. The wires are broken. There's all kinds of stuff that has to happen. But unless one of those tires is severely underinflated or overinflated, it will not be the tires. And it won't be anything else except those four sensors. Now, the repair is simple. and I'm going to have to cover that on the other side of the break. The diagnostic process, you can't do yourself, Ron, number one, but I can describe it to you real quick. So stay right there, and then Dave and Ron, number two, you'll be our next callers right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Tom Fletcher. We've been friends for 142 years, and he runs Thunderbird Auto up at 88th Avenue and Thunderbird in Peoria.
Peoria.
And he's a good friend of mine and a trusted member of our best car repair shops. Let me talk real quick about Automatic Transmission Exchange. Phil has been at 40th Street in Washington since 1968. Phil's been there since 1968. He owns Automatic Transmission Exchange. We affectionately all call ATE. He does everything right. He is so experienced that I'm quite sure he can test drive most transmission problems, and I'm quite sure that 75 to 85% of the time he can diagnose them with a test drive. And here's the good news. He'll do it for you for free. So you can't take him for 2 hours, but he's certainly willing to go with you for 10 or 15 minutes. So if you're, and those of you in Central Phoenix that go up and down Washington Street, when you pass by 40th Street, you look to the north side of the street and you'll see the transmission shop there that's been there for a very long time. That's Automatic Transmission Exchange in Phoenix. Ron, number one, remember we were talking about your stability control?
Yeah, right. By the way, as long as he's sitting there, Tom Fletcher is a very good friend of mine. Tell him I'm the guy with the caddy. I was just in there with my motor check light on, going out.
Yeah, well, good.
Yeah.
Glad to hear that.
And he says, he even gave me a thumbs up. So that means he likes you, and that's a good thing. And I'll tell you what I'll do for you, Ron. I'll tell you that Tom will give you half price on the diagnostic of this stability control. Just bill me for it, okay? Anyway, Ron, what happens is we plug in a computer to talk to your computer, and we go out there and we drive, and we want all four wheels to say 38, 39, and 40, and then we start making really tight turns to the right and to the left. And we know that when we turn left that the inner tires are going to rotate a smaller circumference than the outer tires, but sooner or later, one of those sensors is going to go blank. So we might be going straight down the road, and three of them say 41 miles an hour, and one will drop off. Or when we make right turns, real tight right turns, the outer left will drop off. And then we'll look at the code, and the code will say stability control, lost contact, and sometimes, depending on the year, it'll tell us which corner of the car it is.
It is, yeah.
So sometimes it'll say, well, I've lost control of the left right, but it's not uncommon for it to be wrong. And it thinks it's the left front when it's really the left rear. So that's why you can't go by the codes. So the answer is, and stability control is not going to break you down. Stability control is going to not create the need for a tow truck. And there's nothing unsafe about the stability control being on, except if Ron tries to stop and take drastic measures to avoid a collision, you're not going to have your computer help keep your car straight. That's all that's the difference is. So,
All right.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. And let's go to Ron, number two. Ron, number two, thank you for holding. How can we help you?
I have a 2000 Silverado with 167 miles on it. For the first time ever on the dash, it comes up service engine soon. A day later, it goes off. Tell me your thoughts.
It's a 2000?
2000.
Okay. You have to look in your owner's manual because there was a time that we went from service engine soon to oil change maintenance light. And I'm sure the light is yellow or orange, and that means it's not critical because red is stop the car where you sit. And I think if you look in your owner's manual, service engine soon. Now, they also had a CEL, which is check engine light, and
right.
It was yellow too. So there is some confusion because 1 year it was SES, and the next year it was check engine. And they change the acronyms on us, but your owner's manual will tell you. So when you look at your dashboard layout, it'll say, you know, number 14 is this light here, and then you look at number 14. Service engine soon light, I'm pretty sure, is either one or the other. It's either change the oil now, or it's the same as a check engine light, what we affectionately call a CEL, check engine light. So when they write it down on the ticket, they say check CK. And then CEL, that means check engine light is on. So in your case, the answer to your question is in your owner's manual. And if you can't, then you query this. 2000 Chevy Silverado, and I'd put quotes around all three of those, and then write SES, service engine soon. And then that information will be in Google for
One
you.
Minute.
But I can't tell you, I can't answer your question because there's a split there.
Right.
So thank you very much, Ron. Good luck to you. And the lines are open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. A customer calls into the shop the other day and said she's been going to the dealer for years because they gave her a discounted rate. We ask her about it, and she says, well, we pay an additional fee of $200, so they give us a discounted rate on all repairs. With the discount, they can service their vehicles cheaper than any independent can. What do you think about that?
Really?
I read it right there. I'm going to read it one more time. Customer called in, said she'd been going to the dealer for years. They gave her a discounted rate. I asked her about that, and she says, well, we pay an annual fee of $200, so they give us a discounted rate on all repairs. With the discount, they service our vehicles cheaper than the independent. Couple thoughts to mind. This is my daughter writing this. That's an extra $200 for a year, no matter if they make you mad or don't.
Right.
And number two, what are the odds that they mark it up or down?
Exactly.
Okay, number three, independents are already 10 to 20% cheaper most of the time.
Yes.
And this $200 so you get a discounted rate, I think I'm going to try that. I mean, really and truly, what sense does that make? What that $200 does is tie them to that shop.
Exactly.
And the shop has no motivation to give them a discounted rate.
Nope.
And the customer has no way of really shopping that discounted rate.
They don't know. Absolutely.
Anyway, that's important information for you. If your shop does that, then you know what Mark Salem thinks about that. We'll be right back right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. Tom Fletcher with Thunderbird Auto from 88th Avenue and Peoria is sitting next to me. And we've got some callers, but I got some business to take care of. Remember we were talking about the $200 membership so we get a discounted on the
rate?
Right. Okay. Let me just tell you, I got some additional information. I was looking at page two. In my area, my geographical area, we are $118 an hour.
Right.
The average in our area with all the independents and all the dealerships is like $120 or $122. But we're $118. So we're a couple bucks less than the average.
Right.
Here's the labor rates for the dealers around us. Acura, $138. We're $118. That's $20 higher. Hyundai, $136. Chevrolet, $130. Honda, $140. Dodge, $130. Mazda, $130. We're $18. $118. Now, second question. What's the average hours on a ticket at your shop?
Average. Hourly
hours.
Rate?
No. Hours billed.
Hours billed, average is probably 3.
Oh, bingo. That's exactly what mine is. Mine's 3.1. So if there's 138 here and I'm at 118, I'm saving them $20 an hour times 3.
Right.
So I'm $60 cheaper.
Cheaper.
And frankly, I've been in business in my location more than these guys have been in business theirs. So
exactly.
It's an unusual situation, but it works just fine. Let me tell you real quick about Action Auto. Action Auto is up at I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner. Tom owns the place. I've known Tom since 1979. He's a great guy. He knows right from wrong. He has great technician, and he works on all domestics and imports. He serves that North Phoenix area from Deer Valley North and east and west to probably 50th Street, 50th Avenue. He does a good job. If you don't have a shop, and I-17 and Deer Valley, northwest corner, is convenient, close by, or maybe close by where you work, I would suggest you have an oil change at Tom's place called Action Auto and see how they treat you. That's a good way to determine whether they're going to sell you the moon or just change your oil. All right, let's go to the phones real quick. We're going to go to, do we have Robert? Robert, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. I've got a 2013 VW Passat TDI, and I've got a couple issues. One is the braking. It seems that when I'm coming to a stop, it starts to vibrate, and it's at the lower speed, I guess, when I'm going to stop. I've taken it to the dealer a couple times. They've checked the brakes.
Okay,
stop.
I'm not interested in that. The vibration you have during braking that gets worse when you get slower is because the front brake rotors are warped. And the front brake rotors are warped because typically the back brakes fall out of adjustment which then puts the entire braking responsibility on the front and causes them to overheat. It's probably very worse. It's a lot worse. I sound like Donald Trump there.
Yeah.
Very worse.
Very worse.
Very worse. It's worse when you get off the freeway and you're at highway speeds and you start clamping down the brakes to stop at the stoplight at the end of the entrance or the exit ramp. So the fix is to go in, machine the front rotors, and let's get them flat again, and then to clean and adjust or repair the rear brakes. So that's the fix. I don't care what the dealer said. That's the fix. You diagnosed it, or you described it perfectly, but you had a second issue.
Okay. The second issue is the AC unit on that car. It turns on, when it turns on, it works great, but it's intermittent. Sometimes I'll get out, go to the store, come back in, and then the AC will not turn on. The blower's on. It's blowing nothing but hot air. And I try pushing all the different buttons, and nothing activates it. And okay. Then it's intermittent.
Okay. Well, the intermittent problems are hard, and you need to find out the rhyme and reason, what makes it intermittent. That helps us repair it. Does it have automatic temperature control where you set a temperature and it handles it from there?
Yes, and it syncs both sides, the driver, passenger.
Okay, so it's a split automatic temperature control. So I want you to set both of them at 60 degrees next time. Roll them to the coldest setting. Then the question is where are we at? Then you can roll them to the hottest setting, which is typically 85 to 88, and you should get heat. This is after you stop and run into the liquor store for that bottle of vodka for your wife and come back out. So as you do that, what you find will help us diagnose the car. But obviously on the automatic temperature control, sometimes we need the customer to go to the extreme cold and the extreme hot to help us diagnose the problem. So you'll need to do that first. Okay?
Now, is that when it's running and it's working or when it's not working?
No, you said that when you stop and come out, then it doesn't work, doesn't blow cold, and the problem exists after you stop and come back out from where you're at. And that's the time you're going to be testing. You start it up, and you determine it's happening. At this point, you drop both of them to 60 degrees, full cold. And then after you get cold air, if you get cold air, then you go full hot, and it should go hot. If you don't get cold but get hot, that's going to be a blend door. If you get cold but not hot, that's going to be a blend door or a sensor. But either way, we'll be able to figure it out if you just tell us what goes on during the time it's happening. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Good luck, Robert. Thank you very much. Lee, you're up next. How can I help you, Lee?
Morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I got a 2015 Mazda hatchback Grand Touring package, and looking at the service that the dealership gave me, looks like every 15,000 miles on an intermediate service, they suggest spark plugs every 15,000 miles. And on a major service, they are showing transmission service and fuel induction. And I'm just kind of curious as far as the fuel induction and how often that needs to be done with the rest of that.
I'll bet you $100 that your owner's manual doesn't say that. I'll bet you $100 against nothing. I'll bet you there isn't a 15 car that calls for spark plugs anywhere close to 15,000 miles. That's going to be a 60, a 90, or a 100K spark plug. Then when you talk about fuel injection cleaning, there are specific symptoms that would create the need for you to clean the throttle blades, clean the throttle body, or to clean the intake area. There are specific symptoms, and to do that because it makes your car loves you more, then knock yourself out, Lee. You can pay. You know what? If you put precious air in your tires, and if you use oil from the pink Cadillac, and if you make the car smell nice and never pass gas in the seat, it'll love you more too. And I'll tell you what, I'll do $100 to your $1. You look it in the owner's manual, and you look at the maintenance. First of all, fuel injection cleaning isn't going to be in your owner's manual. Spark plugs are going to be, like I said, 60, 90, or 100. And what was, and the transmission service. I'll bet you that's 60, 90, or 100 as well. So you check it and call me back. All right?
Appreciate it.
All righty, buddy. Thank you. I won't even collect your dollar, I promise, because I know I'm right. Am I right?
Right.
I'm right. Okay. Abdullah, how can I help you?
Hey, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have a 1989 Mercedes-Benz 560 SL.
Okay.
It was running great, but recently, every time or a few times when I stop, the engine shuts off.
Okay.
And then it restarts.
Okay, let me ask
you. I can restart it after.
Does it restart immediately?
When I try to restart it, yes.
Okay, so when it dies, you hit the key, boom, it starts right up. It's not crank, 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 and then it starts.
No, no, just it dies off, and once I restart it, it starts right away.
Okay, so it's not fuel, and it's not spark, so it's something wrong with the induction, the fuel delivery or air delivery, or it's running too rich or too lean. So somebody has to go in there and look at what's wrong. Where do you live, in what part of town?
North Phoenix.
Okay. I don't know if there's a shop in Scottsdale called Goodies. He is absolutely, yes, without a doubt, the best Mercedes-Benz guy I've ever met in all my life.
Yes.
But the last three or four times I've talked to him, he said, "Don't you say my name or I'm going to hunt you down and skin you." So I would call Goodies and say, "I've been told by everybody I know that you're the very..." I would blow smoke up his you-know-what as deep as you can and see if Goody will let you bring your car in and fix this for you. And I know he can fix it. And you're going to say to him, "I want you to diagnose it. How much is your diagnosis? Then call me with an estimate." That's what you're going to do, because that's what you need to do. But if Goody will do that...
I know the air filters were replaced last year, so...
Yeah, it's just really... Anybody can replace parts. I mean, there's a lot of things you could do. You could replace the EGR valve. You could replace the throttle blades. You could clean the throttle blades. You could replace the mass airflow sensor. There's a lot that can be done. But wouldn't you rather just somebody fix the problem rather than just guess with your money? So, really, now, the only other option is to call a couple of auto parts store that handle import parts and say to them, because I don't have an answer for you, who buys lots of Mercedes-Benz parts? Then you take that shop and you query them on Google and you say ABC Mercedes-Benz repair and then the word reviews. And then if everybody hates that shop, you don't go there. But if everybody loves that shop, you might stop by. So that's how you do it. Now, you also have the dealers to go to, and you always could go to them. And certainly they are a viable option to diagnose and repair your problem. All righty, Abdul. Thank you very much. Abdul, I'll get that right. Matthew, you're up next. Matthew, how can I help you?
Hello?
Hi, Matthew. Go right ahead.
Yeah, 03 Tahoe. I am thinking it's a transmission, but my wife is my driver.
Okay.
From first gear to second, it goes to about 35 RPM and around 30 miles an hour. Then all of a sudden it shifts, and it goes like a straight Victoria mode.
Okay. How many miles are on it?
It's pushing 200,000.
Okay. And you've never had a transmission repair?
I bought it about 4 years ago, and no, I haven't.
Okay. What part of town do you live in?
I live in West, in Glendale.
Okay. I think you should take it to Adolph's Transmission on 67th Avenue in Glendale, and I think you should ask him to take a drive with you, which he will. And I would ask him, "What do you think this is?" And he'll drive it for you for free. And he's been on our list for 15 years of best car repair shops. I think they're on the second generation. I think Adolf retired and his son is now running the shop. But I want to tell you something. Any major repair, you might be better off to have a rebuilt transmission done or rebuilt yours. Because at 200,000 miles, you've been around the earth 8 times. And I don't care how this car is driven, there is just so much clutch material on the clutches in an automatic transmission that you can't possibly go much further than that. And frankly, if you would have called me and said, "Mark, what's the life of my Tahoe?" I would have said 125 to 150. So I'm very surprised you're at 200, but I'm glad for you.
2 minutes.
So, all right. Thank you, Mark.
All righty, Matthew. Thank you very much. All righty. I want to tell you about S&S Auto. S&S Auto, it has three facilities, Peoria, Sunrise, and Goodyear. They offer a great line of tires, many different brands, of the same size. So when you go in, they'll look at what you've got on your car, your truck. Then they can give you good, better, best. They can give you three numbers that indicate good, better, best, three different brands, same size, and you can decide. So they have lots, but here's what's really cool. They have a warehouse that has farm equipment, golf equipment, lawn and garden equipment, ATVs, trailers, commercial tires, and construction trucks. So if your wife happens to be driving a John Deere, she can get her tires at S&S Tires as well. And they can do suspension work and everything to do with tires and alignments and stuff like that. So S&S Tire, Peoria, Sunrise, and Goodyear. So Tom's sitting next to me here at Thunderbird Auto from 88th Avenue and Peoria. Thank you for spending your Saturday with me.
My pleasure.
Thank you for being a good member of our best car repair shops. Thank you for always taking my call. I'm happy that I haven't talked to you in 10 years about an unhappy customer.
Well,
I'm happy for that. And I'm happy that when you get people get referred to you, that you take really good care of them. I'm happy that you know right from wrong, and I'm really happy that there's been some changes in your life recently and that you're real happy.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to do with a woman.
Right.
And I'm happy for that.
Right.
As opposed to you just being an old, nasty, crotchety guy without a girlfriend.
Don't want to go there.
I don't either. God bless you. Thank you very much for spending your Saturday. If you live anywhere near 88th Avenue and Peoria, then Thunderbird Auto is a great place to go. 88th Avenue.
Thunderbird.
I'm sorry, in the city of Peoria. We'll see you next week.